Good afternoon. I will call this remote meeting of the House Commerce Committee to order and ask Mr. Brown to take the roll.
Chair Stevenson.
Here.
Vice Chair Katiza Watoon.
Present.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Here.
Representative Barr.
Here.
Representative Carlson. Representative Dabney.
Carlson here.
Thank you. Representative Elkins. Representative Haley. Representative Cagle.
Present.
Representative Lee.
Lee present.
Representative Lilly.
Lilly present.
Representative Lislegard.
Lislegard present.
Representative Lucero.
Yes, sir.
Representative Olson.
Present.
Representative Farr.
Present.
Representative Rasmussen.
Present.
Representative Richardson.
Present.
Representative Tice. And I will call the names again from those we didn't hear. Representative Dabney. Representative Elkins. Representative Haley. And Representative Tice.
Here.
Thank you.
A quorum is present. Our first item of business is approval of the minutes from our January 26th, 2021 meeting. Representative Katiza Watoon, have you had a chance to review those minutes?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and I would move those minutes for approval.
Representative Katiza Watoon moves approval of the minutes from January 26th, 2021. Any discussion to that motion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes for January 26, 2021 are approved. We are going to start hearing bills for the first time this year in this committee. All along, when people have asked me what the priorities for the Commerce Committee will be for this year, I've told them that the number one priority relates to the COVID-19 pandemic and ensuring that our business community and the citizens of Minnesota are able to survive the pandemic and prosper thereafter. And I'm very pleased that the first bill on our agenda this year falls squarely into that category. And that bill is House File 299, and it's Representative Katiza Watoon's bill. Representative Katiza Watoon, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I move that House File 299 be recommended to be referred to the Committee on Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law.
Representative Katiza Watoon moves House File 299 be referred to the Committee on Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law. And Representative Katiza Watoon, would you please describe your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, members, House File 299 is a proposal to support local restaurants by capping delivery and service fees charged by food delivery services. Most of us have likely utilized this type of service throughout the pandemic, either at home or perhaps in ordering food to the Capitol during a late night floor session, of course not this year. COVID-19 has impacted us all as individuals, but it's also impacted our communities and the economy as a whole. As a number of testifiers today will share, the impact has not been uniform across industries. The hospitality industry has taken a disproportionate hit. Many restaurants have had to close their doors permanently in response to the pandemic. Throughout the interim, a small group of restaurant owners and hospitality business consultants reached out to the legislature to discuss a number of relief proposals. Representative Cagle and I, along with Representative Pryor and former Representative Lynn Carlson, met with this group over Zoom, and the proposal you see today grew from that conversation, and numerous similar ordinances are now in place across the country, including those in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Edina. So today we have the chance to effect immediate relief to restaurants across the state and allow them to continue serving our communities throughout the pandemic and beyond.
Thank you, Representative Katiza Watoon. I know there are a number of testifiers, but before we get to that, I understand that there's an amendment, the A1 amendment that I understand, Representative Katiza Watoon, you view as a friendly amendment, so perhaps we can dispose of that first. Is that agreeable to you, Representative Katiza Watoon?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay, and I understand the A1 amendment is Representative O'Driscoll's amendment. Representative O'Driscoll, would you like to offer the A1 amendment?
Mr. Chair, I do offer the A1 amendment to House File 299 and encourage members to vote yes on the amendment. Mr. Chair, let me know when you're ready for me to describe the scope of the amendment.
And why don't you go ahead, Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A1 amendment simply puts in a vehicle in which to have a sunset on this provision. We did not have any legislative no one was approaching me in the legislature anyhow prior to COVID-19 that they needed to deal with this issue. And COVID-19 apparently has brought this on. So if we have COVID-19 sunsetting and the peacetime emergency expiring, then the need for this probably goes away from the industry as well. And so I'm just trying to bring it more into real time and realistic expectations for us and what the industry might be looking for. So, Mr. Chair, that is the extent. It's a sunset for 60 days after the end of the peacetime emergency, which we do know will end at some point. And we also have other statutes that we've passed in the laws that we passed into statute that also have similar sunset provisions that coincide with the peacetime expiration.
Thank you, Representative Driscoll. Representative Driscoll has moved the A1 amendment. Discussion to the amendment. And Representative Katisa Batun, I know you indicated it's a friendly amendment, but I don't know if you'd have further comment on that now.
Mr. Chair, I would encourage members' support. The idea between by making the proposal permanent was just that restaurants would not have any more level of uncertainty in things that may come and go throughout the rest of the peacetime emergency. But I believe that the 60-day extension beyond the peacetime emergency does give them that enough headway. So I would appreciate member support.
Further discussion to the A1 amendment.
Mr. Chair.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Yes. The other reason why I think it's good to have a sunset on here is that if we do codify into state statute a fee structure on here, that's a fixed component, and we're dealing with a very dynamic industry right now. And that we could find ourselves when the legislature is not in session with some of our restaurants and other affected by this in a tough spot where we don't have the ability to take legislative action. And so not being in a peacetime emergency, it would certainly hamstring those restaurants and other providers of services. So I think that's an additional reason for support on this amendment today.
Any further discussion to the A1 amendment? Hearing none, all in favor, please say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. We will now continue with testifiers. And as I mentioned at the outset or just before the meeting, this is a full agenda today. So we are going to ask testifiers to limit their comments to 2 minutes. The committee administrator will be keeping track of that and will notify me. And if someone's going over 2 minutes, we just have to stay tight on schedule today in order to get our work done. The first testifier is Ben Wokesland of Hospitality Minnesota. Mr. Wokesland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Ben Wokesland. I'm the Director of Government Relations for Hospitality Minnesota, representing Minnesota's restaurants, hotels, resorts, and campgrounds, and other hospitality businesses. Here today to speak in support of House File 299. And I want to first say thank you to the author and to you, Mr. Chair, for hearing the bill, as well as Representative O'Driscoll for working with us on this as well. I think it's safe to say financially, no industry has been hit harder than the hospitality industry. In normal conditions, this industry supports nearly 300,000 jobs in this state, $16 billion per year in sales, and remits nearly one-fifth of the sales tax in Minnesota. But the current picture in our state is desperate. This industry has lost 116,000 jobs in the last year. In a December survey that Hospitality Minnesota did with the Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis and Explore Minnesota Tourism, nearly half of the restaurants indicated that without further help, they would face financial collapse in the first quarter of 2021. I ask members to just let that sink in for a moment. Half of restaurants facing insolvency potentially in the first quarter of 2021 without additional help. This is an industry that typically operates on very thin margins, 2 to 5%, as opposed to maybe a 10% average for your average small business, and often don't have reserves or rainy day funds to draw on, and so are particularly in a tough spot to survive a pandemic like we have right now. We anticipate this is going to be a fairly long recovery for this industry and its workers, but we're at a very critical place right now, and we need to use every tool that we can to help these folks stay in business and bring back jobs. Certainly getting back open at 50% helps, but it's not enough. Most restaurants tell us they do not make money at 50%. They simply lose less or break even at best. The state aid from December will help, as will the PPP 2.0, but you know, to be blunt, none of these things on their own are going to save an individual business or this sector. This financial hole is extremely deep as their bills have continued to pile up, whether that be rent, mortgage, utilities, insurance, taxes. These are all due or overdue for many, and at a time when their revenue has been slashed at times to nothing during this year. These businesses tell us that the most important thing for them right now is short-term cash flow, and that's critical. We feel that this bill is one common sense tool that you can use to help these businesses retain some flexibility with cash at this difficult time. As I said, near the top, restaurants and hospitality businesses have truly paid the steepest price of any industry during this pandemic. Many other industries have done quite well this year. For example, one national media outlet analyzed restaurants and found that over a certain period of time this year, 35% of revenue was down for restaurants. And at the same time, delivery services rose 140% over that same period.
Mr. Wagsland, your 2 minutes is up, so if you could just wrap up here, please.
Okay, I will. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Currently, these third-party delivery companies charge 25 to 30% or even more to restaurants, and this significantly hampers their ability to make money on these delivery sales, and we feel are excessive at a time when delivery sales are critical during the pandemic. Many jurisdictions have already passed similar, as the author said, in Edina, St. Paul, and Minneapolis, as well as other places around the country. I want to thank, again, Representative Wodriscoll for helping on the amendment. We are focused on what we can accomplish now in this year to help restaurants, and we think this will help to get bipartisan support in both bodies and move this forward. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you. Our next testifier is David Benowitz of Kraft & Crew. Mr. Benowitz, welcome to the committee, and state your name and proceed your testimony.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is David Benowitz. I'm the president of Kraft & Crew Hospitality. We have four Twin Cities restaurants, including two in Minneapolis, the Howe Daily Kitchen, Stanley's Northeast Barroom, then St. Louis Park, The Block Food and Drink, and in Hopkins, Pub 819. And as Ben alluded to, this has been an extremely challenging year, or 2020 was an extremely challenging year in hospitality, probably the most challenging in my tenure of 17 plus years. This is a small step in the right direction in terms of capping these fees at 15%. Delivery and takeout has increased substantially over the past 9 to 12 months. And we anticipate that staying steady, if not increasing. Delivery is a huge part of our business now. Prior to the pandemic, it made up probably about 5% of our total revenue. Now it makes up closer to 25% of our total revenue. Without the delivery, we probably wouldn't make it through the pandemic. And having these charges being in excess of 30% really cuts into our bottom line significantly. I shared some information with Hospitality Minnesota yesterday with regard to our last quarter. And just in 1 month, our third-party delivery fees for one store was in excess of close to $6,500. And if you multiply that by four stores over a year, you're talking about $300,000 in fees just for four restaurants. So what we could do with that $300,000 would be immense, and in terms of bringing on new staff members, rolling out new projects, opening up more stores, et cetera. And we feel that our hands are really tied at this point with regard to these third-party platforms, because they pretty much have a chokehold on the Twin Cities area. And even if you can negotiate with them, it's only, maybe 20 to 25%. And that's still, not suitable long-term for us. As we continue to figured out this pandemic, and you know, this is a very small piece of what could be helpful for us as we move forward. So I encourage you to think hard about what we're going through. As Ben said, we've been the hardest hit industry in the Twin Cities and beyond. And you know, these fees are large. You know, our profit margins are anywhere, as I said, 5 to 10%, and having 25 to 30% cut in, it's very, very challenging to make it long term. So I appreciate you.
Thank you, Mr. Benowitz, for coming today and sharing your story. And we're all very hopeful that this pandemic will be over soon. You'll be able to get back on your feet.
Thank you so much.
Our next testifier is Dave Sinsbaugh of Crave and Cascade Hospitality. Mr. Sinsbaugh, welcome to the committee. If you could state your name and proceed to your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Dave Sinsbaugh. I'm the Chief Operating Officer for Cascade Hospitality. We operate 14 restaurants in Minnesota, as well as an event center and two event centers and a catering company. Members, I'm speaking in support of this bill because times have changed. As we all know, pre-COVID, we all signed up willingly with these delivery companies and paid, agreed to a percentage of sales for the delivery companies. But as we move into this COVID period, things have changed. Those revenues from delivery used to be a supplemental or incremental revenue for us, and we could accept lower profitability on them. Now they are core, they're part of our base revenue that we need just to survive. As Ben mentioned, a lot of restaurants are in danger of closing, and it's not about profitability, it's about survival. And right now, we need every penny of cash flow so that we can survive and continue to contribute to the economy of Minnesota, contribute to provide these jobs. You know, for us, the ability, you know, in reducing these fees allows us to bring back salaried management positions, good middle-class jobs that people need that we haven't been able to bring back yet because our revenues aren't there. And a big part of this to-go revenue, as David referenced, you know, we were about 2 to 5% in delivery sales prior to COVID, and we're 15 to 30% now. And we need these sales to contribute. And with the delivery fees, it simply doesn't do that. This bill would allow us to provide jobs and survive this tough economic time we're going through due to COVID and be able to blossom when we come out the other side. It'll allow more restaurants to be around. Our Minneapolis and Minnesota food scene is well recognized throughout the country, and I would hate to see it devastated. And this is one way. When you say, how can you help the economy and how can you help people during COVID, this is a way. This will provide real jobs, and it'll allow small businesses to survive and thrive and come out this side, out the other side of this pandemic stronger than before. Thank you, Chair, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you very much for that testimony. And I should have made clear at the outset, I see Representative Lucero, you're seeking recognition. We'll get through the testifiers and then do questions as kind of a common practice. But I appreciate you raising your hand now. That's more than fine. Our next testifier is Ms. Cecia Byrus of Abby's Cafe, and I hope I pronounced that correctly. I'm sure you'll correct me, and I apologize for that if I didn't. But if you could please state your name and then proceed to your testimony.
Hi, Mr. Chair and Representatives. My name is Cecia Byrus, so you were close. I own Abby's Cafe in Minneapolis, and I'm a member of Main Street Alliance. I am here to support House File 299, which puts a 50% cap on fees that meal delivery services can charge. I run a small restaurant with slim profit margins. I try to pay my employees well, so the money I make goes to them before it comes to me. There's not a big markup, so when I pay 30% or more to some of these meal delivery services, it means that I'm taking a loss on that order. I don't mind paying a vendor a fair price for their services, but in this case, they're charging too much, and the money is going out of door and out of state to Silicon Valley. I'm in a position where I can afford to use these services, but with people staying at home and getting delivery due to the pandemic, I also can't afford not to be in these platforms. if I want to keep my business open and my, you know, my workers employed. I can and I do deliver orders myself whenever I can, but I don't have the system to do it in full time. Our customers would also benefit from capping these fees too, because most of them have no idea that restaurants are paying huge fees to these out-of-state companies. Customers think that they're helping a small business survive by ordering from us. They don't realize that Grubhub and Byscore are swallowing our profits. It will be even better if the bill require like a breakdown for customers to know what the restaurant is also paying prior to placing the order. I'm lucky to live in Minneapolis where caps were recently put into place, but there's restaurants from out of the communities, like my aunt in Fridley, she owns a restaurant in Fridley, and she would also benefit from this cap on fees. Delivery apps might even find it more restaurants will be using them if their fees were more reasonable. Capping fees for meal delivery services is a win for customers and a win for restaurants. So please support file 299.
Thank you very much for your testimony. And I apologize again for mispronouncing your name. Our next testifier is Ms. Alexi Madden of DoorDash. Ms. Madden?
Yes, hello. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Alexi Madden, and I'm here on behalf of DoorDash. I want to say a special thank you to Representatives Kitoza Wichun and Representative Cagle for taking the time to talk to us on Monday. We had a very good conversation, and I hope those conversations can continue as the bill moves forward. I want to introduce everybody to DoorDash. I'm sure you're all familiar with our classic marketplace, which is just opening the app and making your order. But we also provide two other services for restaurants. One of them is our product, DoorDash Drive, which allows restaurants to use their own website and keep their brand identity, and then use the technology that we have and our delivery drivers as well to fulfill the rest of the order. And then one of our products, DoorDash Storefront, was actually delivered with feedback from restaurants during the pandemic. Storefront allows restaurants that do not have a website to create one to help facilitate takeout and delivery orders for a flat fee and no commission. To the bill, House File 299 would directly impact our operations on the classic marketplace front. When restaurants enter into an agreement with us, they agree to a certain commission rate, which goes to paying the costs of delivery. You know, I want to take a moment to recognize that without restaurants, we do not have a business. We don't have a platform. And so we are very aware and are helping restaurants to get through this arduous time as well. They don't pay the cost of delivery because we are doing so. Some of these costs that we consider are driver pay, which right now the average driver hourly wage is $22 an hour, driver insurance, background checks, credit card fees, and then customer service agents for consumers, restaurants, and drivers. We are very grateful that this has been turned into a temporary cap, not a permanent one. But in conversations with the sponsors, they did note that they were looking to Washington and Chicago. And it should be noted that the expiration dates of those laws are tied to the resumption of indoor dining, both Washington at 50% and Chicago 60 days past 40%. There's also no consideration of chain restaurants in this bill, and we feel that they should be exempted from the language. I'm past my time, so I will stop here. And if you have questions, I'm happy to answer.
Thank you, Ms. Madden. Our next testifier is Ms. Colleen Daly of Internet Association.
Hi, thanks so much. Good afternoon, Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Colleen Daly, and I'm the Midwest Director of State Government Affairs at the Internet Association. The Internet Association represents more than 40 of the world's leading internet companies, including delivery network companies. IA has concerns with House File 299 as it's drafted. While we appreciate the amendment offered, we still have some concerns with the bill that we hope that we can work with you to address. We believe that the caps established in this legislation will have a negative impact on our company's drivers and threaten the viability of delivery in Minnesota. IA understands the challenges the restaurant industry faces today, but we believe delivery network companies provide a lifeline for many restaurants that do not offer delivery services. Minnesota should want DNCs to thrive because if people are ordering for DNCs, that's also helping restaurants. IA believes this commission cap is problematic and will result in damaging consequences. Additionally, it sets a dangerous policy precedent. We believe that a cap, even if it's amended to make temporary, is a regulatory overreach. It's unnecessary for government to regulate business-to-business contracts in this way. Restaurants have a choice of whether they would want to offer delivery themselves or partner with a delivery company. Restaurant commissions cover a broad range of services made available, and restaurants use our members' platforms. They're not all one-size approach, but rather they're each tailored for each restaurant's needs. Regulating these contract terms is equal to government intervention requiring wholesalers to sell their goods at a loss. Additionally, the legislature should consider the impact this legislation will have just not on DNCs, but also on restaurants. Over 60 jurisdictions of the country have established caps during the pandemic. And when caps have been instituted, delivery orders have been reduced between 10 and 25%. DNCs have tens of thousands of drivers here in Minnesota. If there are fewer deliveries, that means less income for drivers. Many people have turned to the gig work to provide or supplement their income during this pandemic. If they can't make driving possible, they will lose this economic opportunity. I would also point out that instituting a statewide cap will have a different outcome in different communities. Dense urban areas such as Minneapolis and the surrounding cities will likely see a reduction in orders. However, when you get out to less populated areas, you could see a much greater decrease in orders. That will only hurt those restaurants and drivers even more significantly. Finally, we're strongly opposed to the enforcement provision of this measure, which would allow for a private right of action. Should this legislation move forward, we believe that enforcement should lie solely with the Attorney General. As proposed, we still have concerns with House File 299, but we welcome the opportunity to work with you to develop policies that will create an environment where everyone can thrive. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. Our next testifier is Tyler Dyers of TechNet. Mr. Dyers.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Thank you for allowing me to testify this afternoon. My name is Tyler Dyers, and I am the Midwest Executive Director for the Technology Trade Association, TechNet. I am testifying today in opposition to House File 299, a bill that would place governmental price controls on third-party food delivery services. I'd like to just think about where restaurants would have been if a global pandemic would have hit just 10 years ago without third-party delivery to help get product out of their kitchens. There are many factors that come into play that make delivering in-house expensive, and our member companies provide an easy delivery solution that takes this burden off of the restaurant. Restaurants that contract with third-party delivery companies don't have to worry about hiring a driver, worrying if that driver will show up to work, ensuring that driver has a clean record, reliable vehicle, and insurance, determining the delivery radius, or getting a POS to collect addresses and phone numbers. That is the reality of food delivery, and that is why so many restaurants choose our member companies to take on this responsibility. Restaurants also have a choice of whether they want to partner with a third-party delivery company or not. If a restaurant chooses to sign up for these services, the terms and contracts are agreed to by both parties. Commission fee structures are transparent and clear when any restaurant enters into a contractual relationship with a third-party delivery company. While our organization is fundamentally opposed to a commission cap, we do want to acknowledge that if this were to move forward, more work needs to be done. We are glad to see an amendment was filed on this and adopted in committee this afternoon that would remove the permanency of this cap. We do think it should, however, be tied to an actual date or event trigger and not the expiration of an executive order. Lastly, we too do have concerns with the enforcement provision that was brought up earlier. By allowing a private right of action in this bill, we feel that it could lead to frivolous class action abuses, and there should be strong consideration to looking at this if it moves forward. We believe any enforcement should be left up to a state enforcer, such as the state's attorneys general. I do have some additional closing remarks, but in the interest of allotted 2 minutes for my testimony, Mr. Chairman, I yield my time. Thank you for allowing me in here today.
Thank you, Mr. Dyers. Our next testifier is Brett Swanson of Grubhub.
Good afternoon, Chairman and members of the committee. Thank you for your time today, and thank you, Representative Katiza Withoon, for speaking with me earlier. My name is Brett Swanson. I'm head of public affairs for the Midwest at Grubhub. At Grubhub, we appreciate the state of Minnesota's commitment to supporting the restaurants that are the lifeblood of cities and neighborhoods across the state. This is a commitment we share and has been at the heart of our work since we were founded in 2004 in Chicago. But as proposed, the fee cap included in House File 299 would have the opposite effect of its actual intent. A 10% delivery commission would be fraught with unintended and damaging consequences to restaurants and is unprecedented at the state level anywhere in the country. While well-intentioned, fee caps limit how restaurants, especially small and independent establishments, can effectively market themselves to drive demand. GovHub provides critical marketing services that have actual hard costs, which let local independent restaurants compete with large chains that have significant and almost unlimited marketing budgets. In other places where fee caps have been implemented, we have seen a clear effect of caps driving down how many consumers and customers and orders restaurants actually receive, which in turn lowers pay for drivers by reducing the number of orders to be delivered. And that's with higher caps of near 15 to 20%. By setting a 10% fee cap of delivery and a 5% cap for other services such as marketing advertising, you risk completely eliminating that important supply chain of meals and earning ability. Even with the allowance of opt-in marketing services, restaurants will still be constrained until they affirmatively engage with third-party account administrators. This time and delay will cost restaurants thousands of dollars while they wait. Every day we hear directly from our independent restaurants about the unintended impacts of caps. To quote one restaurant owner specifically, he said that, quote, "Fee caps have been a hindrance rather than a relief, and there is no way for us restaurant owners to increase traction and increase our revenue base with these marketing and delivery constraints." So, Chair, while it is critically important that we support our restaurants right now, there are better ways to do it, and we look forward to working with you in these efforts. Thank you so much for your time and consideration today. Thanks.
Thank you. And our final testifier is a man who needs no introduction, Joel Carlson. Mr. Carlson.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Joel Carlson. I own a legal research and government affairs business here in St. Paul, and I wish we were in a live committee setting, but quite frankly, being where I'm at right now, as opposed to the basement hearing room of the state office building, I'm not so sure I'm going to complain about where I'm at right now. Most of the people that have spoken in opposition to the bill have hit points that I would make, and I won't reiterate them. I've long represented Uber and their platform, Uber Eats, and we do have concerns about this bill. I want to focus on a couple portions of the bill directly and then answer a question that Representative Katiza Batun asked me earlier about what's happening where these caps have been put into place. And let's be sure we're clear here. Average order for Uber Eats is about $20. And so you're saying in this bill that our total delivery fee that we can charge is $2. And to try and find a driver to go to the restaurant, get the food, bring it to where it's supposed to go, and do that all within a $2 fee is just economically unviable. And what we have experienced since some fee caps have been put in place is that orders are down, and not down anecdotally, they are down measurably. There are restaurants that don't get served anymore because of fee caps. If there is a conglomeration of restaurants in one area, drivers will wait until there's two or three pickups to try and bundle deliveries so that they can make it a viable option. And the way this is structured right now, not just on the 10% fee cap, but on the 5% cap on marketing, is particularly problematic. Many of the companies just provide the platform for ordering, and that is part of the fee that is included. This bill doesn't specify what we are limited to at the 5% for marketing to. And so when I ask, as you know, we're all sympathetic. I represent bus companies with no passengers, tourism businesses with no customers. I represent a soccer team with no fans. We all have problems, but we haven't come to the Capitol to say that we're going to impair the contractual obligations on business-to-business transactions, which violate our Constitution, in order to have one segment of an industry subsidize another. I just think that what we're trying to do here as a statewide policy will have an opposite effect, and it isn't that we aren't sympathetic. We all understand it, but delivery fees didn't cause this pain. The pandemic causes pain. These are contracts that my client has that have been in existence longer than the pandemic, and we had no complaints. So we're now here, you know, trying to crush one part of the business. If we want to bring down prices, do we tell the grocer what he can charge? We don't. You're trying to step into a private transaction that I think is very risky, and I hope you'll be very cautious about doing this, both because of the negative impact it will have, but the precedent that this may set when someone else comes to you with a completely sympathetic story and they want the legislature to change their contract.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. So that's the end of the prepared testimony. We're now going to move to member questions and discussions. And I do have a few questions that I'd like to ask. And maybe I can start with Mr. Waxland. The bill limits the fee that these entities can charge the restaurants. Is that correct?
Yes.
And I see it also contains a limitation that they can't change the menu price, but I don't see any limitation on the fees that they can charge the customer. Is that a correct reading of the bill?
I don't believe so, Mr. Chair. I think, well, as I read it, sub two, limitation on food deliveries, part three, charging a customer purchase price that's higher than the price set by the food and beverage establishment. Limits them from charging higher fees to the customer. But my understanding of how this bill works with the current language is that it would limit those delivery fees to 10%, other marketing fees to 5%, and then allow for the restaurant to enter into voluntary agreements with the companies for additional services beyond that.
Let me press on that a little bit more, and maybe I'll ask DoorDash how this would actually work in practicality, because I have DoorDash on my phone, and I've opened it up just now, and I'm in St. Paul, a municipality that has enacted this particular restriction, and I'm pleased to see that my DoorDash app still works here in St. Paul, and I've queued up an order. I wish I could tell you that I queued up an order here from a local restaurant, but I did it from a Chipotle branch, and you can maybe tell you what my eating habits are like. But I queued up an order here from Chipotle for a burrito bowl, and I see that there's a subtotal here that pretty much matches what it would be in the restaurant. There's a delivery fee on the line here of $3. There's other fees and estimated tax. There's this regulatory response fee that DoorDash has implemented of $1.50. And I wonder if Ms. Madden could comment on that fee, the regulatory response fee.
Sure, happy to. So yes, you are seeing that correctly. We are charging consumers $1.50. The way we read this language is similar to the way we read other language. There is no prohibition on putting a fee on consumers. Instead, what it does do, and this is something that DoorDash does not do, it prohibits third-party delivery platforms from arbitrarily raising the prices of what the restaurants are charging. On our platform, the restaurants can charge whatever they want for the meals that they provide. It can be different from what they charge in store, and we do not mind. We know several restaurants that inflate for costs, and that's okay. The language here prohibits us from doing that, and we are fine with that.
Thank you, Ms. Madden. That's the way I read it too. And just to be clear, the sort of status quo is when I look at that subtotal, that $10.85, that's just for my burrito bowl before adding the various fees. Your current practice is that DoorDash takes a percentage of that amount, and that's where we're capping, right? We're taking, I don't know what agreement you have with Chipotle, but you know, if it's 20%, let's pretend,
sure.
It would now be capped at 10% of the $10.85, right?
So it would be capped at 10, correct, as Brett and from Grubhub alluded to, it would be 10 and then the 5 for marketing. But there is a marketing exemption in this bill. Okay. So I want to be clear about that.
You know,
the 5 goes for whatever, it could be credit card fees, you know, an additional cost, if you will. And then marketing is exempted on top of that via this language.
Okay. But just to be clear for the committee, I think that we can see by operation here of what's happening in St. Paul right now, that what can happen is these entities can charge the consumers, and then the consumers can make the decision on their end, whether they would like to pay that or whether they'd like to maybe drive in to one of these restaurants and pick up the food themselves. And I think it's a good to have it on the consumer side instead of the restaurant side. Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the question going to be for you, and this series of questioning you just did is in addition to what I have raised my hand for. So just for my own clarity, and this could be addressed to anybody. So my understanding is that there's the potential back-end charge from the delivery service to the restaurant. And then there's a potential front-end charge from the delivery service to the customer, the endpoint consumer. But the bill language here is addressing the back-end charge. Is that correct?
That is my understanding, Representative Lucero. I'm going to ask Ms. Pompu to weigh in if she can and say what her view is. Ms. Pompu?
Chair and members, could you repeat the question? I couldn't hear you quite clearly, Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I can put my earbuds in. Am I not coming across? Is my audio kind of blurry or not very clear?
You're just a little quiet, Representative Lucero.
Okay, I can get closer.
There you go.
So the question is, I just want to confirm. My understanding is that the charge in the bill language is focused on the back-end charge between the restaurant and the delivery service, whereas there'd be nothing in this language that allows for a spike between the delivery service and the end customer.
Chair and members, yeah, there's no discussion of, besides the limitation on raising the purchase price of the food, there's no discussion of the charges in between the customer and the restaurant or the customer and the delivery service. It is a back-end discussion.
Representative Lucero.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. So I am I have multiple commercial buildings and I have food, restaurant, bar tenants. And so I am very well aware of the great work the hospitality industry does and the hardship and the low profit margins. And I've been impacted personally because obviously I've got tenants in that space. And I understand the hardships all the way around. But I am very concerned about price controls. In this particular case, we have the hospitality industry wanting to limit how much can be charged on this service and on just the back end. And so when it comes to the reality of what something costs, you have fixed costs and you have variable costs. And when it comes to fixed costs, it's going to be the totality that the delivery service is charging will be a combination of the back-end charge and the front-end charge. That's how much it's going to cost plus the profit margin, right? Obviously. And so if we're going to reduce what can be charged on the back-end for the conversation we just had, likely what's going to happen is the front-end is going to spike. That's likely. It's just like a water balloon, right? You're going to push in one end, it's going to pop out somewhere else. But the same thing could happen without a price control, which is the restaurants, bars themselves could just raise the prices to capture the cost that they're being charged. I think there's other opportunities to look at this and to come up with options from a private sector, from an innovative side, rather than government stepping in with the price control. Part of the discussion, I think, was also very interesting in regards to rural versus urban. You might have a distance of 0.25, 0.3 of a mile or a mile in an urban area. And within that, you might be able to get three orders. But rural, you might have 15 miles to drive to make a delivery. And so the experience with government enacting price controls is that the supply is reduced, whether it be rent control, gas price control, right? We've seen rural areas devastated with the amount of healthcare that's available to them in terms of options. So I just see this price control reducing further in the rural areas. And Mr. Chair, I know there's more, or there's much more I could say, but I appreciate the chief author and wanting to help out the hospitality industry. I very much am sympathetic because I'm involved at least from an arm's distance to it. And we need to help, but the best way to help is to let these restaurants get back into business. And that's what I'm gonna continue to push for. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Lucero, and we do have a couple more people signed up or who have asked for recognition, and we'll go through those, and then we're going to move to vote on the bill. We do have one other bill to get through today. Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll direct my question maybe to Ms. Daly or any of the folks who are representing the third-party delivery providers here today. The district I'm honored to represent is a rural district about 200 miles from the capital here, and home to many wonderful restaurants that are family-owned and independent. Many of them would like to have access, you know, to third-party delivery, but currently don't, and don't have that as an option to supplement their income and to try to keep their business afloat. And, you know, Ms. Daly or any of the other providers on here Would you be concerned that these limitations would slow or perhaps prevent the expansion of third party delivery apps to rural areas, to greater Minnesota, and perhaps slow that option for our independent restaurant owners? Thank you.
And Ms. Daly, if you could keep your answer relatively brief, we're running out of time here. Ms. Daly.
This is a short answer. Absolutely. We've seen already in other places where these commission caps have gone in effect that these companies just can't function there, unfortunately. And if there's not a demand for it, these are the communities that are going to most suffer should something like this go through. I don't know if any of the companies want to chime in a little bit more, but I think you hit the nail on the head with your question right there. So absolutely.
Representative Rasmussen.
No follow-up, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Rasmussen. Representative Lislegard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not sure if this is for Mr. Carlson or Ms. Madden. Do you guys have the data on the average number of deliveries per hour for a driver, what they complete? And are they geographically bundled so the driver can complete more orders in a shorter time frame?
Mr. Carlson unmuted first, so I will go to him. Mr. Carlson.
Thank you, Representative Lislegard, Mr. Chair. Yes, they are bundled and they can be clustered, and that is going to force out a number of restaurants that can't get the service because they just can't get a driver there. I can try and get you information about average deliveries per hour. I know the information is available, but I can tell you that the way this is structured, not anecdotally, but in actual practice, we are seeing reduced deliveries from restaurants, even in urban areas, because they just can't operate under the strictures of this fee control in violation of the contract that they have in place and have been in place, with their restaurants.
Representative Lislegard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm just curious, so if you could get that data, that would be great. I'm trying to understand. Thank you.
All right. Representative Katiza Watun, do you have any closing comments? I don't know if Representative Katiza.
Sorry, I turned my video off. I'm having my internet's being a little silly. So I have a closing comment here. I wasn't sure if Mr. Walsland, he had his hand up physically on the video, but I don't know if we have time to take it. Mr. Chair?
Just very briefly, Mr. Walsland.
Yes, I'm interested in that data that Representative Lislegard was just requesting as well, because my understanding is these companies continue to operate in all the many jurisdictions that have passed similar caps across the country. I find it hard to believe that orders would go down in those jurisdictions from something like this. So that, and you know, if you want to hear from David or Dave that are on the call here, they're operating in Minneapolis right now. I'm pretty sure all these platforms continue to operate there as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Katiza Watun.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, testifiers for this conversation today. While technology continues to evolve and outpace regulation and can often provide new opportunities and conveniences like food delivery options, we must recognize that marketplace constraints during COVID-19 can have far-reaching impacts. Restaurants provide local flavor, pun intended, and are an important cultural piece of communities across the state. During the interim, as Representative Driscoll had alluded to earlier, the legislature had limited opportunity to respond directly to the pandemic and help our small businesses. So today, we're all able to bring some much needed relief to the food service industry. And I think it's critical that we do our job as representatives to support these businesses in our districts. I ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Katiza Watun. Would you like to renew your motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I renew my motion to recommend that 299 be referred to the, as amended, referred to the Committee on Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law.
Representative Katiza Watun renews her motion to recommend that House File 299, as amended, be recommended to be referred to the Committee on Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law. And Mr. Brown will take the roll.
Chair Stevenson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Katiza Watun.
Aye.
Representative O'Driscoll.
No.
Representative Barr.
No.
Representative Carlson. Representative Dabney.
Aye.
Representative Elkins.
Aye.
Representative Haley.
No.
Representative Cagle.
Aye.
Representative Lee.
Aye.
Representative Lilly.
Aye.
Representative Liz Lagarde.
Aye.
Representative Lucero.
No.
Representative Olson.
Aye.
Representative Farr.
No.
Representative Rasmussen.
No.
Representative Richardson.
Aye.
Representative Tice.
No.
And I will call again Representative Carlson.
And there being 10 ayes and 7 nays, the motion prevails, and House File 299 as amended is recommended to be referred to the Committee on Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law. We'll move to the next item on our agenda, which is House File 102. And Representative Dabney, would you like to move your bill?
I would, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I move House File 102, I believe, to the General Register. Is that correct, Mr. Chair?
It is correct, Representative Dabney. Representative Dabney moves House File 102 be recommended to be placed on the General Register. And Representative Dabney, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members, this has been a difficult year for many Minnesotans. The deep loss of jobs starting last March due to COVID and its related dramatic economic downturn, a sharp increase in unemployment rates, distance learning has forced many women out of the workplace as they support their children through the school day instead, and an uneven economic recovery in its earliest stages have challenged many of our neighbors. Payday loans are often touted as a temporary bridge for borrowers needing quick cash. But members, it's not true. For too many, payday loans and the exorbitant interest rates and fees charged, as high as 200% in interest rates and fees, traps too many borrowers in Minnesota. In fact, in Minnesota, the average payday borrower ends up in 7 loans a year. That payday borrowing trap is not a bug, it's not an accident, and it's not the fault of the borrower. It's a feature of the product. 75% of payday lenders' revenue comes from borrowers stuck in 10 loans or more a year. 10 loans a year. House File 102 proposes that Minnesota curb the excessive interest and fees charged by payday lenders, as 17 other states and the District of Columbia already have. Just this past November, a few months ago, 83% of Nebraskans voted to place the same payday lending cap in their state as proposed in House File 102. In 2018, it was Colorado with a vote of over 70% of their population. And in 2016, our neighbor just to the west, South Dakota, passed the same 36% rate cap by a similar margin. Rate caps such as proposed in this bill protect borrowers from the short and long-term impact of excessive interest rates and fees and keeps money in the borrowers' pockets and in their communities. Mr. Chair, I have several testifiers with me today. I'll defer to you on the order. There may have been some communication by advocates with staff on the preferred order.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. And I do have a list here. So the first testifier is Sarah Nelson Pallmeyer.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and representatives. My name is Sarah Nelson Pallmeyer, and I serve as the executive director of Exodus Lending, which you'll hear more about from our board president, Eric Howard, in a few minutes. Several of our 476 program participants would have liked to join us today, but they are at work and unable to share their stories in person. So they've asked me to do so for them. 3 quick examples. TB from Plymouth borrowed $890 from Payday America, and her loan's interest rate was over 106%. 2 weeks later, she owed $926.27 to Payday America. The first time she took out a loan from Payday America was almost 2 years ago. And over the course of those 2 years, she took out a new loan every two weeks in the amounts ranging from $800 to $890. In those 2 years, she spent over $1,500 just on finance charges for her $890 loan before she connected with Exodus Lending to help her get the loan paid off. There's also ML from Cloquet. She contacted us in October 2020 about an installment loan that's legal here in Minnesota, saying this: I took out this payday loan out in March this year. It was for $1,700. I'm still paying $151 each payday biweekly with no end in sight. It can be noted that the total payments, keeping that schedule, would have been over $3,000 with an effective interest rate of 159.39%. You can see your packet of materials. I'm not sure how that got sent out to you, but there's also a longer testimony from Melissa of Sartell, Senate District 13. And these three are just three individuals of the over 470 people who have contacted us for help. And it's an issue individuals from throughout the state are facing. And these are the sorts of comments we hear from Minnesotans every week because they're struggling with their loan. I also enclosed a fact sheet that describes the problems of payday lending in Minnesota and how Exodus Lending must respond to help Minnesotans get out of the payday loan debt trap they're stuck in because of these exorbitant interest rates. So please place a 36% APR on small dollar loans issued in Minnesota by supporting HF 102. Thank you, Chair and representatives.
Thank you very much. The next testifier on the list is Ms. Megan Olson Biebighauser.
She is not speaking after all.
Okay, thank you for that clarification. The next testifier on the list is Reverend Bill Tesh.
Good afternoon, Chairperson Stevenson and members of the House Commerce Committee. I'm Bill Tesh. I serve as the Bishop of the Northwestern Minnesota Synod of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. When I was elected bishop here in our synod, comprising 223 congregations and over 90,000 people across the northwestern part of our state, our members were responding to an admonition that we be a church that stands with people on the margins. And that is what my testimony here today is about. This bill, should it become law, will be one step in the right direction of standing with people on the economic margins of our communities, people struggling to make ends meet, vulnerable to the trap set for them by payday lenders whose business model is designed to make millions of dollars off the backs of the working poor in our communities. There is no dispute about the business model or the way it works. Yes, occasionally some borrowers are able to pay the money back in a timely fashion, but the real money is made off the many more who are not able and then end up trapped in a never-ending cycle of indebtedness in which a loan of a few hundred dollars balloons into a ruinous debt of several thousand dollars. Our Christian faith tradition, along with every major faith tradition, has strong prohibitions against this form of usury, this exploitation of the vulnerable. In 2016, when I served in South Dakota, I led a charge among faith groups to pass initiated ballot measure 21, placing a 36% rate cap on short-term loans. That measure passed with 73% of the vote, with the support of every major faith group, and I might add also the chambers of commerce and the banking industry, who understood the business model for exactly what it was. Voters did what the South Dakota legislature was unwilling or afraid to do. Let's not wait for a ballot measure. Let's have our Minnesota lawmakers lead the way in standing with the vulnerable and against exploitation. Thank you.
Thank you, Reverend. Our next testifier on the list is Ms. Heidi Duran, former Moorhead City Council member.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for allowing me to speak today. I will be speaking in support of House File 102. My name is Heidi Durand. I recently finished serving 9 years on the Moorhead City Council. I'm also a faculty member at Minnesota State Community and Technical College, where I taught sociology and anthropology for about 20 years. And I also work as an economic justice organizer for Minnesotans for Fair Lending in the greater Minnesota area. Predatory lending isn't, it's exactly what it sounds like. It's predatory, it preys on our most vulnerable, and it's not just a metro issue or metro problem anymore. It's a dangerous industry that impacts more and more small, often financially burdened rural greater Minnesota counties every year. In 2019, the hardest hit counties per capita were Anoka, my own county of Clay County, Blue Earth County, Hennepin County, and Beltrami County. Now, most of you are probably familiar with the counties of Minnesota and realize that three of those five are greater Minnesota counties. As a former councilwoman, I saw firsthand the jaw-dropping numbers coming out of Clay County. Our local economy has lost hundreds of thousands of dollars year after year just in interest and fees on these, quote, small dollar loans. To be specific, from 2016 to 2019, our local economy here in Moorhead lost, I should say Clay County, not just Moorhead, but our local economy lost $961,000 to predatory lenders. that's money that's taken directly from our shops, our local services, local restaurants. And as startling as that fact is, it shouldn't blind you to the other atrocities of this issue. The annual percentage rates that we already heard about in Clay County, a person taking out a loan can pay anywhere between 200 and 263% on a loan that they take. And draining somebody's bank account is another atrocious aspect of this issue. When people sign up for a payday loan, they typically have to give access to their checking account, and therefore the lender has access to any funds that are in that account, oftentimes overdrafting a customer if they're not paying on time or watching their deposits.
And Mr. Rand, if you could wrap up here.
Certainly. Thank you. I guess, you know, my point is that in Moorhead here, we felt it was time to act. So we took it upon ourselves to initiate our own regulations. And as soon as we passed an ordinance an ordinance with our own regulations, the two lenders in town chose not to open their doors. Therefore, we have kept our citizens and our residents safe from predatory lending. And if anybody is interested in what we did here in Moorhead, we're the first city in Minnesota and one of the first in the country to take action ourselves at a local level. Thank you for your time and your consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Rand. The next testifier on the list is Mr. Eric Howard.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and representatives. My name is Eric Howard, and I serve as president and chair of Exodus Lending, a statewide nonprofit that exists to relieve Minnesotans from financial stress caused by payday lenders. I'm here to speak in support of House File 102. Exodus Lending was founded as a response to the pain revealed after an Ace Cash Express opened its doors down the street of my home congregation. We reach people in counties with the highest volume of active payday loans. We pay off their loans, and they pay us back over 12 months at 0% interest. Our program has served over 470 Minnesotans from 36 counties. We've lent $371,000 and estimate that we've saved participants in total $1,130,000 in interest and fee payments. That's money they keep, which is incredibly important in today's health and economic crisis. The truth is, when people have no choice but to borrow cash at an interest rate as sky high as 200%, people, families, and communities suffer. I know this because I know our participants. I hear their stories, and I've listened to their concerns. Participants from Sartell to St. Paul, from Bayport to Blaine, tell us payday lenders take advantage of them through unbelievably high interest rates and fees in their most vulnerable moments. 17 states have already enacted legislation that limits predatory lending. This month, the Illinois General Assembly passed the Predatory Loan Prevention Act, which places a 36% cap on consumer loans. It should be noted that it passed with overwhelming bipartisan support. It's time that we in Minnesota enact similar common sense legislation to relieve the estimated 40,000 Minnesotans caught in the payday debt trap. Vote yes on House File 102. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representatives.
Thank you, Mr. Howard. Our next testifier is Ms. Chris Volkers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Chris Volkers. I serve as the city administrator for the city of Oakdale. And I was formerly recently in 2020 the city manager in Moorhead. So I have rural and urban experience to do about this. Cities have a responsibility in my world to ensure the health, safety, and welfare of our residents. And we have seen payday lending negatively impact our residents, especially low-income residents and other vulnerable persons. During my time as city administrator in both the city of Moorhead and city of Oakdale, I've seen the predatory lending cause lasting economic harm to individuals and local economies as capital that could be circulated within a fee of resident-owned businesses being triple interest rates and fees imposed by outside interests. By explanation, there are various cities, as previously mentioned, around Minnesota that are hot spots for these predatory lending businesses, such as Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Moorhead, being among those with large activities, loans, high interest rates for residents. Payday loans tend to cluster in low to moderate income neighborhoods, another issue, in urban and rural areas alike, with such pervasiveness in cities as just mentioned above. And in my experience, they disproportionately cities of color. As we cities continue to think about how best to create safe and inclusive communities and address racial equities, further protecting our residents from predatory lending practices is critical. One way to do that is to further limit finance charges and interest rates on consumer small loans to better protect consumers from a financial spiral that we so often see with predatory lending. The legislature can help our residents and better protect consumers from those types of loans that quickly become debt traps by limiting the interest rates and capping fees that can quickly pose financial ruin to a resident just trying to make ends meet. Finally, while local cities in Minnesota can impose code restrictions on these predatory lending businesses, like Moorhead just did, the lenders will just move to the neighboring city that does allow these practices. For cities everywhere in Minnesota, it makes much more sense for the state legislature to limit interest rates to curb these predatory actions that negatively impact cities and local economies throughout Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee.
Thank you. And I believe Representative Dabney, that concludes your testifiers.
I believe that's correct, Mr. Chair. Yes, sir.
All right, we had one other testifier sign up in advance, Paul Cassidy, Mr. Cassidy.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Paul Cassidy. I'm with the Stinson Law Firm in Minneapolis. I'm here today to speak in opposition to this legislation before you on behalf of our client, Payday America. Specifically, we're testifying in opposition to the 36% APR interest rate cap that's in the bill. I think as someone alluded to earlier in the previous bill, 36% interest rate cap is simply not economically feasible. I've also included a one-page document in your packets, I hope, that runs you through a typical or an average $350 payday loan transaction. Payday America, if you didn't know, operates 12 locations throughout Minnesota, many of them in suburban areas in the Twin Cities. In addition, in this bill, in addition to the negative impacts on our employees, this bill will effectively eliminate over $100 million in short-term credit currently available in Minnesota, cutting off tens of thousands of Minnesotans who each year access short-term credit. The legislation will have the complete opposite effect what the supporters of this legislation intend. This legislation will force individuals into worse options when they need a short-term credit resource. By limiting their choices, you drive them to higher cost, unregulated lenders, such as offshore lenders, unregulated lenders from other states, the internet, sovereign nation payday lenders, as well as others. We are unaware of any material complaints from Minnesota consumers involving our loans that have been complaints that have been filed with the Minnesota Department of Commerce, our primary regulator, or the Attorney General's office. Minnesota's regulated short-term consumer loan industry is a safe, reasonable, and responsible place for consumers seeking financial products. Putting us out of business or restricting consumers' access to credit doesn't reduce the demand to address a short-term financial need. It would rather create a $100 million hole in Minnesota's consumer credit market. I could also point out, in the past 3 weeks since the legislature first convened, I believe the Minnesota Department of Commerce and the Minnesota Attorney General's office has testified in both your committee, Mr. Chairman, and across the street. I am not aware that during their testimony talking about the operations of their departments and the issues that they address, that either one of them highlighted payday lending as a problem. In fact, I believe the Attorney General, previous Attorney General and current Attorney General encourage folks that are looking for short-term credit products to stay off the internet and use local regulated bricks and mortar stores for their short-term credit needs.
Mr. Cassidy, if you could wrap up your testimony, please.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, I will conclude my testimony right now. I just want to pose one thing before the committee, and that is that to think about that if it's reasonable or fair to charge someone $35 for a $350 loan for 14 days. If you look at the economic model, that if you placed a 36% rate cap in place, that $35 fee would be reduced to approximately $4.60, not economically viable. With that, Mr. Chair, I will conclude my remarks and would be happy to answer any questions you have.
Thank you, Mr. Cassidy. So that concludes the list of testifiers who signed up. We'll now move to member questions and discussion. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had more of a point of discussion. I just wanted to thank Representative Dabney and the testifiers today for being here. When I worked at CHUM, which was a homeless shelter and food shelf in Duluth for a number of years, I shared an office with a number of social workers, and I remember the calls that would come in, people in desperation seeking services, you know, and it was payday lending was some of it. And I remember one of the social workers actually prepping someone who'd gone through this experience to testify in this similar piece of legislation many, many years ago. So I think it's well overdue, and I hope we can get it across the finish line sometime soon. And I would also say I'm just really struck sitting in this committee and sitting in all of the other committees as we're going through budget overviews right now and talking about what we need to put together over this biennium for the state, that when we see people struggling in this way due to payday lending, they're often seeking services like at CHUM around housing, around food supports, around a number of other things that, you know, I would rather see people not going to services where all of their money is going to these exorbitantly high rates and someone is profiting off that, but then they have to turn to frontline services that we as a state have to lift up to support it. And so this is just another example of how we can take care of people on the front end so that we don't have to see them when they're in desperate moments of crisis. And I see that this is just so much tied into all of the other discussions we're having around housing, around food, around all of the other things. And even though we're in commerce, it's really tied to the larger budget considerations we all have to deal with this year. And I really support this bill and glad to see that it's moving forward as one of our first bills in the Commerce Department or Commerce Committee.
Thank you, Representative Olson, for those excellent remarks. Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Olson and I were probably working with the same people because I've been working, one of the first issues I cut my teeth on at the legislature was working on payday lending as well, and that was 15 years ago. And so one of my jobs was to collect stories from people who had, you know, taken advantage of these payday loans and then subsequently gotten taken advantage of. People would use one loan to pay the other. You know, they'd go to the internet and it just the stories I heard. And this was just, you know, it standing on a corner talking to people. It was really, really difficult. And, you know, what this strikes me is just kind of legalized loan sharking. And so I really hope that we can come to support this legislation. And I think it's long overdue. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Cagle. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and thank you to the Bill Offit for bringing this forward for conversation for us today. I want to put some things kind of in, whoops, in a little bit bigger picture here in the context of some things. Frequently, much to the dismay of financial service customers, they may bounce a check and there's an overdraw fee that is charged by the financial institution, somewhere in the neighborhood of $25, $35, maybe even $40. And the vendor who you bounce that check on may also have an additional fee. And as a result, your APY, your annual percentage rate, is going to be four digits if you look at it for the 1 or 2 days that fee is going to be in place if you don't get it resolved. I do have people in my district who have contacted me, although limited, who have said that they do like the option of having opportunities to be able to fix their car when they don't have the cash. They are sometimes not wanting to visit with family members or friends to let them know about their personal finance situation, to be able to repair that vehicle, to be able to stay in business, to be able to go to and from work and to and from some of their other activities. I've also experienced in my background the fact that in real estate, when you amortize the costs of interest over a 15 or 30 year period of time, it becomes a lot less for the APR, the annual percentage rate on that, versus the APY, which we are talking about here today. There are fixed costs that are associated with business transactions, whether it be for a 1 day transaction or a 30 year transaction or somewhere in between. I fear, like the Attorney General does, that if we continue to limit options for people, that we will end up putting people onto the internet looking for money, who those lenders or people that they're doing business with may or may not be in the United States. And it's an internet, which means that it's not just strictly within the confines of the state of Minnesota. It may be outside of the state of Minnesota, where our Attorney General would have limited authority to be able to protect those individuals. Although not palatable to some, others have asked us to continue to preserve their rights as consumers to have that as an option. And I would want to call out specifically the comments that Mr. Howard made. Congratulations and hats off to you and your organization for helping people with an alternative and a way to be able to look at this. In a free market society, in a free market, if entering and exiting, one would certainly be able to do more of what you're doing and other organizations to give people an option. So congratulations on your offering an alternative to individuals. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
All right. Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. I don't have any other members seeking recognition. So Representative Dabney, would you like to make some closing remarks?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members, for the opportunity to present this bill and for the conversation. I believe that actually it was said best by Ms. Volkers. Government has a responsibility to look out for the health, safety, and welfare of its citizens. We don't get complaints about predatory loans because the consumers know that they're predatory loans. It's not that they're being delivered poorly. That would be a bug. This is a feature. So it's our opportunity to listen to the voices of our community and recognize that at a time when too many of our neighbors are being challenged, that we need to step forward and ensure that they're not taken advantage of in the marketplace by inappropriate lending practices. A 36% rate cap provides opportunity for small-term loans to still be offered, but reduces the long-term negative impacts that many borrowers experience from getting into a debt trap. Again, the average payday borrower takes 7 loans a year. That's a long-term problem for them. Members, I ask for your support so that we can join the, thanks to Mr. Howard's reminder, I believe it's now 19 other jurisdictions in the country and the District of Columbia in capping these rates and fees at a reasonable percent. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Representative Dabney. Would you like to renew your motion?
I would, Mr. Chair. I'd like to renew my motion that House File 102 be recommended to pass and to the General Register.
Hearing no further discussion, the Dabney motion before us, Mr. Brown will take the roll.
Chair Stevenson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Katiza Watoon.
Aye.
Representative O'Driscoll?
No.
Representative Barr?
No.
Representative Carlson? Representative Davney?
Aye.
Representative Elkins?
Aye.
Representative Haley?
No.
Representative Cagle?
Aye.
Representative Lee?
Aye.
Representative Lilly?
Aye.
Representative Liz Lagarde?
Aye.
Representative Lucero?
No.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Farr?
No.
Representative Rasmussen?
No.
Representative Richardson?
Aye.
And Representative Tice? I'll call the names again. Representative Carlson and Representative Tice.
There being 10 ayes and 6 nays, the motion prevails and House File 102 is recommended to be placed on the general register. And that concluding the committee's business for today, we will stand adjourned until next Tuesday. Thank you.
Chair,
Before I adjourn, I'll Representative O'Driscoll.
Mr. Chair, can you give the members an idea what the landscape looks like for next week for committee hearings and things?
Representative O'Driscoll, thank you for that question. I am absolutely certain that we will be hearing bills on Tuesday in our regular committee time, and I am reasonably certain that we'll be hearing bills Wednesday during our committee time. I expect that those bills will be posted shortly. I will give you a sneak preview, though, and say that we will be hearing Representative Holland's bill on equity stripping and Representative Katiza Watoon's bill on reverse mortgages in our Tuesday meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And those bills will be posted for Tuesday, tomorrow, you figure?
Yeah, either today or tomorrow, those two bills. And hopefully we'll have a final answer on what's happening Wednesday, today or tomorrow or the next day.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Greatly appreciated.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. And seeing nothing further, the meeting is adjourned.